97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm still trying to get home from Sue's last night because I got lost on the...
You have a phone with GPS.
Oh, wait. I wish I was making this up. But because Rivas Barracks was closed, I'll tell you the story in an hour. But I'm not making it up. I feel very stupid. I had problems getting there, too.
You have GPS.
Yes, but see, the GPS said, exit at Rivas Barracks, and that was not possible. And then the GPS said, exit at Rivas Barracks, get on 55. I'll get into it. We'll talk about it. We had a nice dinner at Sue's humble abode last night in South County. I am still... wiping down the drool from Oscar the Bulldog, who was awesome, by the way. So I we're eating dinner and Oscar's underneath by my legs. And once I gave him some attention, and I love dogs, you know that, he could not get enough. He starts climbing on me. And you know, I used to have a bulldog, so I love the bullies. But we'll get into all that here as we go to the 4 o'clock hour and lighten things up. Let's talk some serious stuff here for the Reardon Roundtable. Former State Senator John Lamping, who's also going to join me on Tuesday night for some deep election analysis, is here. Hello, John. How are you? Great to see you. Let's see if we have the right... No, Ethan, we still don't have the right mic on this one. There we go.
I'm doing great. Good to see you.
Notice how nice I blamed Ethan there? I blamed Ethan even though it was my fault completely. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is here as well. How are you?
Like a typical conservative.
No, that's actually not a bad point. I'll accept that. All right. So there's a part of me, gentlemen, that even wonders, and we're going to do it anyway, whether or not we should have a conversation this afternoon about Amendment 4 and Amendment 5. Because, and let's start with Amendment 5, John, because I cannot see... how in any way, shape, or form this thing even comes close to passing. I'm not sure who messed up what. I support it because I think it's an opportunity to transform the tax system in Missouri. I was doing the math again this morning. Okay, I looked at my paycheck and I looked at my W-2. And look, I do okay for a living. I know not everyone is making a ton of money. But if you look at your pay stub and you see how much the state is taking out each week or each every other week or each month, and then think to yourself, can you really make that much up in extra sales tax? My math equation says no, but that's not stopping people from spreading, you know, a lot of things about this that aren't true.
Yeah, if you pay state income tax, you know, if your family income is anywhere north of $35,000 or $40,000, they would have to raise this. They'd have to tax things at a 5% additional or more for you to be worse off. So right now, you get every single dollar you make, you're taxed at 4.7%. If that goes to zero, the money that's left behind, you'd have to be taxed in an outrageous amount just to break even. The people who are worse off are people who don't pay state income tax. It's really that simple.
And then who are those people? Because, you know, the elderly come up a lot, but they're still paying some income tax depending on 401k distributions and things like that, right?
Yeah, but they're not paying on Social Security, which is the primary source for a lot of people that aren't affluent.
And then there is a difference between, I think, like private pensions and public pensions as well. Is that true?
So Jeff's exactly right. If your sole source of income is Social Security, Republicans in Jeff City graciously stopped taxing Social Security years ago. The maximum benefit for Social Security is about $38,000. So it gets back to, like, if your family income is $40,000 or lower, you're paying very little to maybe no state income tax. Yes, you're going to pay more. If your income is higher than that, it's almost impossible to pay more. So what people need to understand, if they're going to support this and their family income is below $40,000, is that it is proven to be true that in states that don't have state income tax, they have faster growing economies. So if the economy is a certain size under our current tax system, what we're trying to sell to the public, and it's true, is that if we had no state income tax, we'd have a bigger economy. That's really hard for people to figure out. I have people that would benefit by the tax cut are still voting no because they don't understand that they're benefiting. You know, they don't look at their net paycheck. They don't look at what the state income tax is. And they oftentimes get a refunds. So they feel like it's not that bad. And they're voting no because they're just tired of paying income tax. And more importantly, I think what's flawed in what's actually in front of the people is that it's purposefully vague. People do not trust politicians.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And I think that's very warranted. And I know we were having a conversation before. I think that the people that wanted this to fail did a really good job of getting this version through the legislature. And we've talked about this before. What was heard and was passed out of the House, heard in committee hearings and all that kind of stuff is not this bill. This bill came to the Senate floor on a Monday afternoon as a substitute. The Democrats were very happy with it. They were quite certain, as are, you know, the anti-Amendment 5, this would be very difficult to pass. It passed out of the Senate, and that's what we have in front of us.
So,
today.
Jeff, I want you to comment overall, but, you know, the one thing that caught my attention there, and this is true of the people that I've spoken with on my side, is that they don't trust the Republican legislature. They don't trust overall, and that's one of the reasons that they're going to vote against it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of that out there. You're hearing that from Republican state Senate candidates in primaries around the state. In fact,
there's one Senate candidate, I played the commercial yesterday, that actually took out another ad against the other Republican and pointed out that he supports Amendment 5, and that's a bad thing.
They're doing that all over the
right.
state.
Right, so that...
Which, if that's happening in Republican primaries...
Exactly.
Then the thing probably has no chance. More broadly, because
right.
in Democratic primary polls that I'm seeing... 80-90% of people are voting
against
no.
It. Right.
And so if it's even close enough in a Republican primary that candidates think that there's political profit in pointing out that the other guy supports it, this thing's going down. Right?
Why? Let me ask you. I want to start with Jeff Smith on this. Why is it so bad to phase out the income tax? Now, I get that the argument is, oh, we're going to be taxed and everything, but the opponents are really lying about a lot of this stuff. And everyone is going to decide on their own whether they vote yes or no. And I get that. You can do whatever you want. But when I see people out there on the no side saying it's going to triple your, you know, sales tax, it's not going to do that. It's going to make $43,000 onto a $300,000 home. That is not going to happen, okay? So there are things out there, and maybe both sides are misrepresenting, but I don't understand why there's such harsh reaction to this, because it's incredible to me. You know, like the conventional wisdom would have been, I've told a couple of people out of state that we're trying to phase out our income tax and that it's going to fail. And they're like, are you crazy? So everyone in this state seemingly does not like the way this went down. And that's why it's probably going to fail. I would say more than 2-1.
I'll say a couple things. Number one, uncertainty is something that a lot of people fear. And the nature of getting this to this point, they thought that it would benefit them. The proponents of getting rid of the income tax thought this will benefit us to be vague, okay, to not really lay out exactly what taxes might go up or how much they might go up. Let's just focus on your income tax going away. They thought
that was a miscalculation,
and that was a fatal miscalculation, I think, ultimately. I also think we're in an environment where, you know, for 3 or 4 years, we were looking at inflation that was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9%, far above historical averages, which are typically 2-3%, I think, over the last, you know, 50, 60 years. You've got some exceptions in the 1970s, but mostly inflation has been in check. After a 5-6 year period where you've had inflation 2-3 times that historical average, people are very sensitive to what they're paying for groceries and gas. These daily things that people are pretty preoccupied with after the last several years. Conversely, John said it well, and John knows this stuff because he's been in wealth management for his whole career. People don't often think about the big picture of their situation. They're thinking about Ground beef is costing me $9
right.
a pound. It was $6 a pound a year and a half ago. That's so the specter that they're going to have to pay more every day, all the time, for these little things has outweighed
yeah.
the idea well, that they might pay less once a year.
I think there's a lot to that. And, you know, I recounted this conversation. John, I was telling you, went to the Maverick show at the pageant last Thursday night. I'm walking in and I hear these two guys just right outside. I think they were smoking in the outdoor area and they're talking about Amendment 5. And the one guy, he was a young kid, probably early 20s or something like that. And he's saying, look, with inflation, basically, he said in very simplified form what you just said, Jeff Smith. But he said, you know, with inflation being so hard, prices are going up, and then they're going to add taxes, and that means prices are going to go up again. Well, it's hard to argue against that in some circumstances, right?
Well, it is, except for the fact that, like I said before, if they have enough money to go to the Maverick show, they're probably making more than.
He was actually working for the pageant,
yeah, so,
though. Actually, this was a guy that worked there.
But they're just forgetting that part. That part's huge. You know, if you make,
I get
you make
it. I don't understand. I don't understand why people can't look at that part. It's all Facebook is a toxic place anyway. But when I look at Facebook and I'm seeing Republicans and Democrats basically saying the same thing,
it makes complete sense that Democrats would be completely against this. I would imagine there was nobody voted for it, right, out of the Senate or another Democrat. And because
they used the rules of the Senate to negotiate language that was more amenable to them.
And still voted no.
This
is the regressive nature of our tax code that goes back to Woodrow Wilson in 1913. The fact of the matter is, about 55% of working age adults in our state work. 45% working age adults do not work. Even the ones that work, if you make less than $35,000, you're paying little to no state income tax. So it's a minority of people in this state that are paying the vast majority of the taxes. It's regression. It's regressive. The more successful you are, the more you're paying in, and the services that you consume as an individual don't go up with the more money you make. And so the Democrats are against it. It's the regressive tax code. That's what this is. And it's our rate. We pay so much more in income taxes relative to other taxes. It is easily one of the huge reasons why our economy is as stagnant as it is.
That's John Lamping. Jeff Smith is here as well. Jeff, one thing I've had people ask me is, well, what's the Democrats' idea for economic growth? If you don't like this, how do you get Missouri back on track when it comes to economic growth?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, like higher education and having more people who are in K-12 right now go to college, graduate college, and be a workforce that major companies think will be beneficial to them is more important to every CEO pretty much I've ever talked to. They're not making these big decisions about where to locate companies or huge branches of companies based on tax regimes as much as they are. This is a place where we'll find the workforce of the future. So I think Democrats' vision is more about creating that workforce that will attract companies rather than, you know, changing the tax rate.
But, you know, I have friends, I think we might all have friends that, you know, a good friend of mine in Las Vegas who got his company to let him live there because there was no income tax. So, I mean, people go to Florida, there's no income tax. There's certainly appeal there on the part of people who are paying it. But this thing has been, you know, really kind of mangled, unfortunately. How much damage if it fails and it fails bigly to Governor Kehoe, John?
Not enough.
Really?
No, I really do.
You mean he won't get the blame?
No, he will not get the blame. Look, this is a huge idea. And Mike mentions oftentimes that he ran on this, which is maybe. He ran on a lot of other things, too. And
this was one of the promises, though.
Yeah, but this is if all the things he ran on, this would have the biggest impact on the way our state operates going forward. He should have been campaigning. He should have drafted the language himself. His staff should have had a bill last January, and he should have worked hand in glove with the legislature and say, this is what I want it to be, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to spend the next 2 years explaining to the public why this is a good thing. Like, if it really was the number one priority, this is not just like, you know, a tax credit for, you know, inner city stuff or an agricultural carve out. This is huge.
It's a big deal, right?
Mike waited until the whole thing cleared the legislature. Even then, he wasn't out campaigning. He waited until like the official campaign began. In the end, they're going to spend $25 or $30 million, I think, on the pro side. And I think that might keep it from getting, you know, as wide as 15 or 20. Maybe they'll get it down to 8 or 9. But no, I think Mike will be fine. But I think that you should really question just how much did he really want this to pass.
Jeff, do you agree with that? I mean, I think it's a legitimate, you know, analysis.
I think he did definitely want it to pass. I think that probably when the numbers started going south, he maybe wasn't out in front of the parade as much as he had originally intended to be. I think it was one of the top two things that he campaigned on. Returning control of the police back to the state was probably, you know, number one, and this was probably number two as far as I could see it. And I do think it'll have, you know, a moderate effect on the perception in the Capitol of his political strength, but it won't be devastating to him. But it'll probably make, and depending also on state Senate primaries, he's taken some risks by going out and endorsing some people in certain state Senate primaries. If his candidates in those primaries lose and this goes down, I think it'll have some impact on his influence in the building.
But Jeff, you and I both know, if Mike had taken this to the legislature last year, if that bill came out of there last year, okay, in a form that was a much better form than it's in now, that would speak volumes to everyone that this is his top priority. I mean, the best chance this had to pass would be what I'm describing. And to do what he did and to have a Senate substitute bill get voted on a Monday afternoon, which Mike knows exactly what's going on, which is it's BS, and then to wait until, what, 60 days out before you heard from him on this vote?
Maybe less. Yeah.
Maybe less.
We got to take a break. We're coming back with more. It's a Reardon Roundtable. All right. It is a pre-election, pre-primary Reardon Roundtable. Foreign state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith on the panel. We got some other things to talk about this afternoon that are on the ballot. Amendment 4. Let's not spend too much time on this. Jeff Smith, I'll start with you. Look, I think this is another one that kind of goes down. I understand the point. I've been just unhappy with initiative petition process in Missouri literally since the 1980s. The way that we're choosing, at least now, to fix it is to say, okay, if you want to pass an initiative petition like the marijuana issue or whatever else, you not only have to have a majority, but you have to have majority voters in each congressional district, right? So there were options. Like, couldn't you have ramped it up to, instead of just simple majority,
could have made it
55 or something? Those ideas were on the table, right?
Could have made it 4-7. There were a lot of ideas to the table, but instead they picked the one that is kind of reminiscent of that old line in Animal Farm: all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. Like, all voters are equal, but some are more equal than others. It has to pass, you know, every single congressional district. But, you know, and so one congressional district that's against something might vote against it 51-49. It could win 90-10 in the other seven districts and win 80-20 overall, but go down because those few voters in that one district that opposed it are more influential, more important than the other voters in the other seven congressional districts. It just doesn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense to the voters. That's why I think people are skeptical. That's why I think it's going to go down, when they could have done something, as you said, that was a lot simpler with just simply raising the threshold.
I would have been more of a fan of that if you say 55% or whatever the number will be. Another moot point, perhaps, John Lamping, because I don't think this one passes either.
No, I don't think it does either. I think 55 would probably be a bridge too far as people giving up their rights to go to the ballot. They think that they're going to go to the ballot, and the point of the fact is they need to have $5 million to go to the ballot. So, I mean, bring initiative petition process. I think this one will come back. Maybe some modification. As it turned out,
we've been talking about it for like 4 years now.
It has to change because it's the easiest way to do it in the entire country. There's about 10 or 12 other states that are tied with the easiest, and that's why we get the things like medical marijuana and sports betting. All these things come through the initiative petition process. As it turned out, though, the no fives tied themselves to a no four. Everywhere it's like no five, no four is all. So it probably would have taken the four down anyhow. Though, having said that, I know a certain number of Republicans that are no five, yes four, because they're smart enough to know that initiative petition process needs to be reformed. It'll probably be closer than five.
Agree on that.
Well, I think voters, I mean, I don't know how much comprehension there is on that particular issue. We got an educated audience. They know what they're voting on. But a lot of people really, I think, will be a little confused by that one, won't they?
Yeah, again, this is even a bigger question. Who's responsible for explaining for the voters this time around?
I think that was one of those ones where a lot of people were like, you have to do it. You've got to do IP reform. We'll be there for you. Let's do it. And then they did it.
Yeah, then they're gone.
And now they're gone, and nobody's putting the money behind it.
So, I mean, really, you grade the legislature. They both get the legislature gets an F minus for both these ballot initiatives. They're horrible. And
that's harsh. That is harsh. F minus.
Well, I mean,
is that on a curve or not?
Well, that's actually the average grade in New York City most of the
time. Oh, my goodness. Now, I can't argue with that.
Yeah, but I think, and again, there's no, to get these things done, you got to have somebody or somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has to do the heavy lifting and do the explanation.
Nobody's doing it. Yeah, I don't get it. I'm confused by a lot of it. All right. St. Charles, the executive race out there, that's hot. That is really hot. If you're a Democrat in St. Charles, you want to have a say in who's going to be the county executive, probably pull an R ballot. We can talk about St. Louis County doing the opposite in a second. Bill Igel, Jason Law, probably the least known of the three, and then Steve Ellman, the incumbent. Steve was not going to run. He didn't like that Bill Igel was getting into the race. Bill has been an obstructionist in the state Senate with the Freedom Caucus. He's got big name recognition. A lot of people love what he's about. John, what do you think happens here? Because this is going to be a tight one, isn't it?
I think Bill's going to win because it's a three-way. I will say this, though, at the beginning. I feel very good about all three. If any of the three of them end up the county executive, I'm happy. I think whoever's running Jason's Law's campaign did a really poor job. I think he's an interesting and capable individual whose campaign did not allow him the time necessary to explain who he was to the public. He's got very low voter ID. You may recall he came out early last year, and when that happened, I thought, well, this would be interesting. He'll have a year. He's doing the right thing. He's going to campaign for a year and a half, explain to everybody who he is. I feel like his campaign shut down until like maybe 2 months ago. I don't understand that. I think if it's Steve, I think the county is doing fine. It's doing more than fine. And he, I've been involved in a lot of things with the county with Steve. It's a very boring job. There's a lot of digging ditches and stuff. And Steve's good at understanding all that. And I think that's fine too. Igel is the candidate. The real big upside for me with Igel is that I think what's going to happen in St. Louis City and St. Louis County these next 4, 8, 10, 12 years is not going to be really good, and it's not going to be good for St. Charles County. And I think of those three, Bill's most capable of being outspoken and pushing back hard on what St. Louis City and St. Louis County are going to try to do.
Jeff Smith.
Well, I'm not going to say who I would like to see win because I don't want that to turn up in an ad for their opponent. I will say Steve Aleman may be too conservative for St. Charles County. Oh, does that ring a bell?
Todd Aiken.
Yeah. Remember Claire did
you're
that.
No, yeah. Oh, you're no Claire.
Yeah. But look, I think a three-way race is definitely to Bill Igel's benefit. I'll say that because he's got a very, very... You know,
hard 30.
Hardcore floor of people who love him. I've went out there and was out there on election day 2 years ago helping someone in a Republican primary. And I saw the Igel troops at the poll sites and they are on fire, you know, for him.
Yeah.
And so I think what needed in order to beat him, you needed to coalesce around one candidate. And they thought it was going to be Jason Law. And then they did some polling and it showed that Law probably didn't have the name ID to win. And they didn't have the faith that he was going to be able to build it over the next, 6 to 9 months. And then Aleman kind of said, well, I guess I'm the only one who can win. Mm-hmm. I'll get back in. And I assume Law will probably end up getting out. And
that didn't happen.
Yeah. So now they're in this predicament where I think Igel ends up winning. And I don't agree with some of the stuff that he's out there saying, saying we shouldn't have any more apartments. If you care about the cost of living and housing, you want to be affordable, then don't violate free market principles and tell people they can't build things.
I don't think he's saying we don't want any apartments. He's saying that some of that has kind of gotten a little bit out of control when it comes to the developments out there. Now, what Steve will tell you is those are the local communities that are making those decisions. I hear from a lot of folks in St. Charles County that are concerned about ruining the aura out there and the rural aspect of some part of it. But how do you do that and how do you balance it when the growth is so explosive, right?
Well, it's very difficult. As a county executive, it sounds like a glamorous thing. But what you tend to do is you tend to butt heads with all the mayors because there may be land that's actually county land and somebody comes in, they want to build 800 homes on 6 acres, which is the kind of try I want to do. And you say no as a county and they go, well, fine, we'll just go over to the city. The city will annex us in and they'll approve it. So it's not a very fun, exciting job.
But if you're Bill Igel, he doesn't seem like the type of person that just wants to get in there, dig in as an executive, and run that office on a day-to-day basis. He's more out there on the issues, and he certainly is uber conservative on a lot of those. I think some people think he'll start campaigning for governor right around now. He said, I asked him a couple weeks ago, he said that's not the case, but he definitely has ambition beyond St. Charles County executive. I think we know that.
Well, having said that, it'll be interesting to see how he responds and how he acts. He may hate the job. I mean, I've been around it enough to know just how boring it is. And so for him to have to get up every day and go to work, and it's a series of all kinds of meetings and planning meetings. And I was on the 5-year planning thing that he's referencing in his ads. So I do like the idea, though. I mean, we're going to get to St. County Executive. I do like the idea that we need a much stronger pushback, a voice that'll push back on the powers here in St. Louis City and St. Louis County for what's coming.
And we're going to talk about that. One of the things that John is referencing is there's renewed talk about a county-city merger. So we still have two more segments to go. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a... All right, it is a Friday Reardon Roundtable. We still got a lot to cover here. Former state senators John Lamping, Jeff Smith on the panel. All right, so I've already told the audience, I'm going to pull a Democrat ballot in St. Louis County on Tuesday. I haven't voted yet because I want to vote in the county executive race, and Dennis Hancock is really going to be the Republican nominee. And I wish I felt like a Republican could win in St. Louis County. I just think that I've seen too much evidence. I was there the night that Rick Stream and Bill Corrigan lost in their, respective campaigns headquarters way back when. Jeff, I'm going to start with you on this one. I've gotten to know Senator Williams just a little bit. I've known Jake over the years. Super nice guy. He's kind of embracing his nerdiness, if you will, in this campaign.
He didn't have a lot of choice.
Well, what? Maybe not. But look, he's a smart dude. He went to go to Harvard or something like that. All you guys are fancy people with educations. But what do you think ends up happening in that race? Because, look, I think a lot of people thought going in, Brian Williams was absolutely the prohibitive favorite. And I'm hearing folks, you know, thinking that Jay can pull this off on Tuesday.
Yeah. You know, first of all, Jake is a brilliant guy. People talk about, I hate politicians and I hate politics. It's all drama and it's all backstabbing and intrigue and lying. If you don't want that and you just want someone that literally focuses on policy and making the office run well, and like he says in his commercials, he's never going to be glamorous, but he is going to do the job. Jake's kind of appealed to that exhaustion with all the drama in St. Louis County politics over the last decade. So that's been in his favor. Brian is a charming guy who meets people well and does a great job at retail politics. It hurt him, but, you know, he had a rivalry with Angela Walton Mosley in North County. And that's come back to haunt him because she filed and that split up the vote in his base and really opened the door for
two,
Jake
two
Zimmerman.
Black and candidates so, and then Jake and that. Yeah, right. That might have an effect. John, what do you think on this one?
Well, I was just curious in what Jeff was going to say. You know, Jake may come across as this, you know, nice, bubbly, ginger, nonpartisan dude. He is a crazy, hardcore liberal, privately and publicly, and he's very smart to the extent that he's been in this seat, he's been in the House for a while, and he's been in this role for a while. He's just waiting his time. And so if the election, if the primary election is one that brings out a ton of crazy liberal St. Louis County people, which, by the way, that's kind of St. Louis County.
Right.
That's the majority,
John,
right?
Is Jake too liberal for St. Louis County?
No. Actually, sadly, with the Democratic Party now, we have to sort of look at, well, is he a socialist or is he just crazy liberal? So actually, he's probably closer to the center of your party now, because I don't think Jake's a socialist yet. He doesn't have to be yet. But my point is to say is that if... That's who's gonna vote in the Democratic primary? Democrats. Who comes out and votes in the Democratic primary in St. Louis County? Liberal Democrats. You know, I've represented a bunch of them in, you know, Creve Coeur and Clayton and places like that. Jake's their guy because Jake hasn't just been sitting there, you know, measuring the value of your home so he could tax you more. Jake's been going to all the things that all these liberal people go to year in, year out. He's in there. Along comes Brian. Brian's like the shiny object. Brian's the guy the Republicans are kind of okay with. And some of the business leaders are behind Brian. We're going to get, I think, if you're telling me it's that close, is it that close? Is it
close? Yeah.
You've seen polling on it?
Yeah, he has.
I've seen polling on it, yeah.
Yeah, and so that tells me, I think Jake wins, and then we get a monstrously liberal dude, and he'll be there for a while.
He's not
monstrously liberal ginger. Yep. Well, you know, to me it's weird because outside of this show, like where I live out in the Fenton area in St. Louis County, I don't see any signs. I see nothing. There's like one Amendment 4 sign that I drive by, but it's almost like this election cycle is bizarre to me. And I don't know if that's because a lot of the ads are on digital and a lot of us don't watch local television where some of these ads are, but
I think campaigning is kind of a lost art right now, and there aren't many candidates that run a good old-fashioned campaign with hundreds of volunteers out knocking on doors anymore. They just aren't.
No. Okay, we got a couple of races, though, to still talk about. Gina Mitt and Steve Butts. Steve, a regular on the roundtable, he was on last night. He's in a tough race in a Senate district as a moderate, you know, centrist Democrat against Gina Mitt, who's a former member of the House, and she's trying to really concentrate on abortion, trying to get people maybe in Richmond Heights, Maplewood, Clayton to come out in that district. Steve probably has more support in South City, South St. Louis. How do you see this one coming out?
I think it's also going to be very close. If the only issue you're voting on is reproductive freedom issues, then you're going to vote for Gina. And that's a salient issue with reproductive freedom on the ballot this fall on Amendment 3. If you want somebody who has shown that they've developed tremendous respect in Jeff City among Republicans and Democrats, and it's been super effective in getting stuff done, then Steve Butts is probably your candidate.
John.
It'll be interesting you could have races go different ways, but I think it like what I'm suggesting is if Jake wins, if you told me Jake's already won, he's going to win, then I think Gina wins.
Yeah.
So it's the same voter. So it's the liberal, like, you know, abortion is the only issue, and it's the second issue, it's the third issue, it's the fourth issue, then they win. Of course, Steve should be the state senator. Of course, Steve could do more for this region than anybody in that Senate, including Brian Williams, right? And, all St. Louisans should be rooting for and, if possible, voting for Steve Butts multiple times if you can. It is a Democratic primary, by the way.
But those South City and South County voters, they can pull a D ballot and get
it. They can.
I've been
instructing people that's what you do.
Right.
But again, my understanding is Minton's been ahead by a lot most of the time. And again, if you tell me that Jake's won, then she's won. If she's won, then Jake's won.
Cori Bush, Wesley Bell. All right. So, you know, Wesley's now the incumbent, but Corey's got this DSA stuff. Is there momentum there enough, even though she's had no money and she's, you know, an embarrassment to this region? Does she have a shot?
Well, she's a previously owned DSA person, right? So if she was a person that nobody knew about and the socialists could get behind with enthusiasm, then it'd be she'd have a much better chance. As it is, she's kind of used and discarded, and I think they'll just come after Williams the next time around with a better candidate.
Jeff, how do you see that one?
Agree 100% with John.
So you think Wesley's going to win?
The DSA candidates that have been winning in other places in the country, in
New
York
and
Colorado,
support.
They've been tabula rasa, just a blank slate that they could be like, I'm the DSA person. She's got a ton of baggage, and that's, I think, going to ultimately bring her down.
All right, hang tight. This is one of those roundtables where we really could go a couple hours. We can't do that, though, today. We have a 4 o'clock hour. We can't skip Sue's News. For the love of God, the audience would go crazy on that one, right, Sue?
Oh, I don't know.
No, of course they would. But we have former state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith here as we wrap up one more segment on the roundtable. There were a couple of appointments this week that I was very confused by. Okay, one by Governor Kehoe, who names former Mayor Vince Schemel, who I think is about 125 years old at this point, to the Education Board. And then Kara, who I've lost all faith in at this point, the mayor, who's in Mexico trying to recruit migrants, appoints and hires Faisal Khan, the disgraced former St. Louis County Health Director, to a job in the city. Can you guys help me out with either one of those? Why do we need Vince Schemel? God love you, Vince. I know you were mayor about 100 years ago here in St. Louis, but is that the best choice that Governor Kehoe can make?
So I'll say two things. Number one, Vince Schemel's got more energy than anybody his age I think I've ever seen.
Okay.
I mean, he still wakes up in the morning and thinks, to his great credit, how can I make this region better?
Okay.
Secondly,
take your word for
those appointments depend on, you know, you got to appoint someone from a certain geographic area and a certain party. And Governor Kehoe wants to make sure that there's somebody who is not just beholden to the teachers unions, but wants to make sure that families have options. Vince has supported like charter schools in the city, in particular, an art school connected with Grand Center when he ran Grand Center.
I think Shamel's a good pick.
And so I think I'm fine with the pick.
Yeah, you're okay with it?
Well, I think it's not good news you're going to be delivering to the schools in this part of the state. You know, it's going to be closing schools, consolidating schools, offering more school choice and things like that. So
I'm just being ageist, basically.
Yeah, you're being, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll accept that.
Your age is surprising.
I know, actually it is. You're right. I shouldn't do that. I apologize to Mayor Schemel. Faisal Khan, what the hell is that about? I mean, seriously, can someone help me here?
I don't think anybody can be helped. I mean, to me, it's clearly the first unforced error of Kara's administration. There could be more, but it's indefensible. Maybe somebody owes somebody money.
But here's the deal. Look, she came into office in a tough position. There's no doubt with the tornado. But public safety remains the number one issue. You know what's happened down there. Look, I was with Jane last night. I think I can tell this story. I hope it's okay. There was blood that is on the sidewalk in front of that Schnucks down there, crossing the Opal stuff. That's where Jane works now, right?
Yeah.
She actually made sure that the fire department came over there to wash off the blood because it was disgusting that people had to see that. We had a stabbing at Pelker Park last week, too. I mean, that whole Mark Twain building is a disaster. Mm-hmm. It is. So what in the hell? So I texted the mayor about 10 days ago, right, and got a quick phone call back. I didn't answer because I was at the pageant. I don't think she was too happy with me. She's supposed to come on a week from now and talk about this. But what the hell has she done to move public safety in a better direction? She's, you know, suing the police board. We're not making progress on that. I want the city to move forward. I really do. I want success in this city. But we can't have that if we can't solve that problem, which we talk about every freaking Friday.
For years and years and years. And it's not... She didn't run on that, and the Board of Aldermen's not interested in that. The Democratic Party that controls the city of St. Louis doesn't want to hear about how we should fight crime, and they're going to try to merge the city and the county. Let's touch on that. This is important now
because this is a renewed conversation. I'm glad you remember this.
This is happening. So it's been going under the surface for like 3 or 4 months now. It's been building. I think late last week, the Regional Business Council, 100 CEOs. That's based in Clayton. I think your ex-wife used to work for them, actually, way back in the day. Jeff's ex-wife, and they're all coming out. There's a study that's being paid for. There's a new Better Together group. It's not called Better Together. It's something else, Greater St. Louis or something. And then today at the Post on the front page was a merger's coming.
Right, right.
Okay. So all these guys are running for office. They don't even talk about it.
No, that's not even on the table for discussion, which is kind of weird. Look, for people who don't have the perspective, this was tried about a decade ago. And look, I supported it from maybe a similar perspective that I did with the income tax, because I thought it was an opportunity to consolidate government in a way that was needed for this region to move forward. Now, I don't know there's a path here. That's the thing. You could be talking about this behind closed doors and stuff, but what's the path to do this?
So I think the path to do it is to merge a new department every year. Okay. Merge police, then merge the health department. Just tackle one of these big things every year. You don't necessarily have to merge the city and the county. You merge all these functions.
Which I would be supportive of for the most part.
And you save a lot of money and you put that money into shoring up the long-term finances of two areas that really have a lot of pension overhang that's going to be very costly. And I think in 10 years, I'd love for somebody, one of my kids to say to me, hey, are they going to merge the city and the county? And me to be able to say to them, they've actually already merged 90% of their functions. The rest is just a technicality.
But a lot of this,
I think, is a path to do
it. A lot of this is a perception thing. And there are people in St. Louis County that don't want to even start with this conversation, because the theory is, look, we don't want the city's problems, right?
Well, yes, but I think because it is a perception thing, but it's not just a perception thing within St. Louis. It's a perception thing nationally and internationally when people see our crime numbers. If you merge the city and the county, immediately we go from one of the top five highest cities when it comes to violent crime to number 50. We're not even on that list or in that conversation because the county numbers dilute the crime challenges of the city.
So we're better on the table. We're not one bit safer. Okay. So look, I met Mark. This, I think it was 2017 is when the Better Together thing happened. 2017, 2018 was the vote. That's how I met Mark Cox. We're in a meeting. We're against it. There's a lot of us against it. Mark Cox has moved to St. Charles County. I live in St. Charles County. Look, this is eventually going to happen. The city and the county is going to merge in the rest of my lifetime, if I'm given another 15 or 20 years. And because the people that are against it are going to throw up their hands and they're just going to leave.
Yeah.
And that's when I talked before about St. Charles County and Warren County and Franklin County and Troy County. What's going to happen is once that merger happens, then the powers that be behind the city and county merger are going to look at them. They call them the collar counties and say, okay, boys, you need to get in the boat too. We need to share services with you. We need to, transportation dollars, all these things. So that's like the idea of having Bill Igel out there, giving them proverbial middle finger is not a bad thing. Because and it is amazing. We're having an election for the county executive, Democratic primary.
Nobody's talking about that.
I
think that's...
Which
that's
means it's going to happen.
Give Sarah Fenske some credit. In Sarah Fenske's interviews of all the candidates, she asked them both that, spot on.
And they said, oh, it's a good idea, maybe just not now. And there's no press on it. There's nobody's talking about it, Jeff, because they know that it doesn't do well in a primary.
I think you're right about that. Yeah. All right. Hey, we got to wrap it up. John is going to spend some time with me on Tuesday night here in the studio. Jeff, love to have you on the phone if you're available to kind of weigh in as some of the results come in.
Sure.
That offer's on the table. Same compensation as usual, just so you know, if you need to check with your agent.
I'll be in New York City, which is actually still standing after a year of Zora.
Is that where you're going to be?
I know it shocks you.
Are you going there to sell your second property that you have to pay taxes on?
He's going grocery shopping.
I'm going to take my daughter for her birthday to Hamilton.
Oh, that's cool. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Seeing it on Broadway, I think, would be really, really awesome. All right. Great to see you guys.
Get more at 971talk.com.